This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes. Also, make sure to check out and subscribe to our YouTube original channel, UCTV Prime, available only on YouTube at youtube.com/UCTV Prime. This UCTV podcast is sponsored in part by Audible.com, your destination for the widest selection of digital audiobooks available, including many by guests you've heard here on UCTV. Audible.com is offering UCTV podcast listeners a free 30-day trial subscription and one free audiobook download. Just visit audibletrial.com/UCTV to sign up. That's audibletrial.com/UCTV. And thanks.
So our next speaker is Ryo Hirose. He's going to work us out this way. So Ryo is professor of surgery and one of the most active transplant and hepatobiliary surgeons at UCSF. He has really maintained a very strong interest over the years in treatment of HCC, performing very high volume of resections, and he's our main guy for laparoscopic RFA as well. And he's also currently the chair of the Region 5 UNO's Liver and Intestinal Transplant Committee. And so this is a perfect opportunity for him to enlighten us about transient organ allocation in this country. Okay?
Great. Thank you very
Thanks,
much.
Thanks, Ryo.
Slideshow. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it, Francis, and thanks for coming up here to Napa this afternoon. I wanted to inform and update the group in terms of what's going on in organ allocation. And as such, during this short presentation, I wanted to review somewhat the past history of organ allocation in this country, review the current allocation policies, and clear up any questions you may have. And hopefully this will be interactive, that you, if you have any questions about how things work. I also wanted to update this group on the thoughts of how we fix some of the problems that we have with organ allocation policy in the United States. Disparities to access to transplant that are geographic and otherwise based on your diagnosis, for example. And then possibly look into the future in terms of changes to the allocation system in the United States and how we're going to address some of these problems and issues. And again, if something's unclear, please feel free to interrupt me. In terms of the history of liver allocation and transplant, back in 1967, the first successful liver transplant was performed. For several years, kidney transplants were done as well. But the first organized fashion in terms of figuring out how to match organs to recipients was actually done by an organization called the Southeast Organ Procurement Foundation. And it was formed as a membership and scientific organization for transplant professionals. And they, in 1977, actually implemented the first computer-based organ matching system, and they dubbed it the United Network of Organ Sharing. This was a precursor to the current UNOS. In 1984, an important event was the U.S. Congress passing the National Organ Transplant Act. And part of this National Organ Transplant Act was the establishment of the OPTN, that is the Organ Procurement Transplantation Network. And the role of the OPTN, or whoever won the contract, was to maintain, was multifold. It was to maintain a national list of candidates and to establish and maintain a system to match organs with candidates. And back then, even the U.S. Congress wrote down very specifically they needed to assist organ procurement organizations in the nationwide distribution of organs equitably among transplant patients. And I'll get back to that word in terms of equitable or fairness in terms of what areas that we still need to work on in terms of allocation. In 1986, now, the United Network of Organ Sharing was now separated and was a standalone nonprofit organization, and they received the first OPTN, federal OPTN contract. And ever since then, they've actually continued to renew the contract and still won the contract every 3 years. So UNOS, John's the president of UNOS this year, has maintained that contract and still is responsible for establishing the allocation policies that relate to the distribution of deceased donor organs. More recently, they've also been involved in establishing guidelines for living donor candidates and living donor living donors as well. I won't really delve into that, but that's sort of a relatively new area for UNOS to go into. Now, the original liver distribution allocation system was a local, then regional, and national, similar to what exists now, but it was fairly complicated and subjective. They were listed in six different categories of illness, given different illness points for various conditions, and it was fairly complex. The candidates also got points depending on the proximity of the donor to the transplant center, trying to favor the local allocation of those organs, which minimizes transport and cold ischemia time. But there were several problems with this initial system. There was this UNOS stat, which is equivalent to what we have as status one right now, but was very subjective. Any center could just say, this is a UNOS stat patient, and it designated them as super urgent. And some centers would use it very frequently to garner livers in, and some would not. And so there was some unfairness, inconsistency to this process. The next iteration of the allocation system and algorithm did reduce the number of statuses. So they lumped together status one as those that met certain criteria for acute liver failure and acute liver injury. And status two patients were in the hospital, either sick or not sick. Status three patients were at home. But they basically lumped all these patients together based on CBT score, et cetera. And what distinguished one status two patient from another status two patient was waitlist time. And so if you waited longer at that status, you'd get priority for someone who waited a shorter time. Now, that seems fair in one way. It's first comes, first serve at a certain disease severity. But waitlist time really does not correspond to a lot of things that we care about, including the likelihood you're going to die without a transplant. So, unfortunately, waitlist time and waitlist morbidity and mortality really were not represented or associated with each other. In addition, there was still this notion of geographic proximity and that livers would get allocated first locally, then regionally, then nationally. As long as the local centers didn't want it and the regional centers didn't want it, then the offer went national. Now, more recently, the U.S. Department of HHS published what was called the final rule for the operation of the OPTN. And in 2002, a major change came about where we incorporated some of these rules and accomplished some of the rules by switching the allocation system to not the status, but a more continuous score. You all know this as represented by the MELD score. In that final rule, the allocation cadaveric organs, the policies had to meet certain requirements. The allocation policies, the final rule said, shall seek to achieve the best use of donated organs. So there's a component of utility. The policy shall also be designed to avoid wasting organs to avoid futile transplants. So there's some notion of the post-transplant outcome, which is actually not right now involved in the allocation of organs, except perhaps the allocation of organs to HCC patients, to promote patient access to transplantation, to promote the efficient management of organ placement, so there's utility and efficiency, and it shall not be based on the candidate's place of residence or place of listing. Basically, they set us up for a prioritization of the patients on the list. The final rule did state that they wanted the sickest patients to have access to the organs first. It specifically said that you must set priority rankings that shall be ordered from most to least medically urgent. And there shall be a sufficient number of categories, if categories are used, we used integer MEL scores right now, to avoid grouping together patients with substantially different medical urgency. This was certainly the case when we had status 2 and status 3 as a big lump sum of patients that had varying different urgencies. And so one status 2 patient would be very different from another status 2 patient, the only difference being their waitlist time. And that was considered not fair in terms of how urgently one patient needed a transplant over another. So the bottom line is the MELD score is a huge improvement over that, and we'll get into that. The other statements that the final rule stated is that the allocation policies shall not be based on the candidate's place of residence or place of listing. And one of the goals that was specifically and discreetly, explicitly outlined was that the system should distribute organs over a broad geographic area as feasible and in order of decreasing medical urgency. So nowadays, we still elevate the status 1 patients, that is, the patients with acute liver failure, as the most urgent patients for transplant. By definition, we should try to only list patients that meet those definitions and that we believe have less than a 7-day survival. At first, this was allocated on a local basis, but nowadays status 1 patients are actually lumped together both local and regional, and by regional I mean the UNOS regions. Followed by this, the MELD scores are ordered from 40 down to basically 15 at first, and those patients are then offered the liver after the status 1 patients. The MELD score, of course, was first developed to predict mortality after TIPS, but it was shown to also predict quite well the 3-month mortality on patients of patients that are on the liver transplant wait list. In terms of the UNOS rules, the MELD score is capped at 40, and again, it is shown to be relatively accurate in predicting 3-month waitlist mortality in liver transplant recipients. Now, there are a portion of patients whose MELD scores do not obviously reflect their severity of illness, their impairment of their health, and their potential mortality. Those include the patients with HCC. So the allocation committees have really tried to gauge where to set those artificial MELD scores. And we've, to lesser or greater success, degree of success, tried to gauge how much to give HCC patients, for example. I'll argue that we're still working on that, and we probably are still favoring HCC patients too much, at least on the national level. That may not be the case in our local region, though. There are other disorders that one gets MELD exception points. For example, metabolic disorders, familial amyloidosis, that those patients will never really reach a MELD. So there are standard exceptions that the regional review board will hear and see and get exception applications to artificially elevate their MELD scores such that they will compete with those patients that have true MELD scores. In spite of all this, we still have problems, and we're still trying to address them on a very active level. We still have geographic disparities, and we still actually use the donor service area, which is defined by the area around an organ procurement organization, is still the smallest unit of distribution for livers. These OPO areas, or DSAs, are really quite arbitrary. There's 59 of them in the United States. There's a huge variety of size and populations that these areas encompass. They range from 1.3 million population up to 18.7 million for those OPOs that have large populations. Another issue is that OPO performance also varies, so that one OPO may have a very high organ consent rate and conversion rate, whereas another OPO may not. And so there are interests that sort of don't want to necessarily share everything, in that they think of it as supporting another OPO if we had larger areas of distribution. Now, if you have resources and you realize that you are living in an area where you have very high MELD scores, average MELD scores in that particular region, and you will probably have to get very, very sick or wait a very, very long time before you get your transplant, if you have the resources, you are allowed to double list or triple list or multiple list. In fact, the UNOS regulations tell us that we must tell our patients they have that option. Now, in a practical sense, many patients actually, this is not a real option for them. Their insurance companies don't really want them to list all over the place, and they not all of them have the resources to fly given a few hours to a certain area to go get a transplant. So there are still different access depending on different geographic locations. I wanted to concentrate a little bit on what might be a fair, and this is a concept of fairness that I want to make sure that people understand. You know, we have to figure out what the metric of fairness is and the what a metric of equity is. And people argue what that should be. Should we be looking at the variance of the MELD scores at transplant? Should be looking at variance of waitlist mortality? Should we be looking at variance across regions of drop off the list? Should we be looking at variance of acceptable organ offers for the highest MELD patients? These are all very good questions, and one of the areas that is most important in right now, at least what we're concentrating on the Liver and Testicle Committee, is how much priority should we give the HCC patients? What's a fair number for a patient with an HCC to give to compete fairly but not get a huge an over advantage compared to the patients without HCC? So this is what we've done historically. When we first started to give points for HCC, patients with a single tumor less than 2 centimeters was given 24 points. Those that had stage 2 tumors or above were giving 29 points. It was quite clear when that was first done that that was too many points and that there were more and more patients being transplanted with HCC, probably a fair number who would do just fine staying on the wait list. In the next subsequent several years, the number of MELD points that we gave these patients kept on going down and down as we tried to recalibrate how many MELD points that a HCC patient should have. In April of 2003, we decreased the original MELD down to 20, and after 2004, we didn't give any points for patients that had a single tumor under 2 centimeters. And that actually seems to be justified based on more recent data as well when we looked at how those patients fared, particularly if they have effective local regional therapy. They have a very, very low dropout rate and so or progression rate. So we think that this should still continue, that patients with a single tumor less than 2 centimeters should probably not be given any priority. On the other hand, what about those patients with a tumor greater than 2 centimeters or with multiple tumors within Milan criteria? Well, those patients originally got 29, were knocked down to 24, and now get 22 points. Now, is this the right level? Probably not. Those patients that are transplanted with HCC exception points versus those without have a much higher likelihood of getting transplanted within 30, 60, and 90 days after being put on the liver transplant wait list. The issue is that in over half the areas in the country, a MELD of 22 is certainly sufficient for you to get a liver offer. That is not the case in Northern California, in which the median MELD, for example, with blood type O, the median MELD at transplant is on the order of 31 to 33 points. That's at least 3 cycles of upgrade of your MELD score before you get really eligible for a transplant. This is not the case across the country. If you look at the differences between the dropout rate, and now we're looking at a measure of fairness as the dropout rate, we're comparing dropout rates of patients with an HCC exception score versus patients that don't have an exception for HCC, and we're looking at the percentage of patients that drop off the wait list. Now, we're in Region 5. If you look at Region 5, we actually have a slightly higher, it's actually quite equivalent, dropout rate between HCC patients and non-HCC patients. So we may actually have an equitable system in place right now. But look at Region 3. Region 3, the dropout rate for patients that have HCC is only 4.8%. Those patients are probably getting too much of an advantage in Region 3. So this points out one of the complexities of how you fix the system. By giving lower and lower points across the board, across the country, you're going to further disadvantage your patients with HCC in Region 5. Whereas the patients in Region 3 that have HCC ought to probably be more disadvantaged compared to what they get, because they get transplanted right away with their melanoma exception of 22. So it really points out maybe some of the complexities of what we need to think about when we try to fix this system. Personally, I don't think it makes sense to give everyone across the country the same MELD exception for HCC, given the disparities in your MELD score that you need to achieve to get a transplant in different regions in this country. So the other modifications we're considering on the Liver Intestinal Committee include modification of the MELD score. The MELD sodium has clearly been shown as a more accurate portrayal of mortality on the waitlist, particularly for those patients with a low to middle MELD score from 15 to 18. So that proposal is in public comment phase and will likely go through. The other issue is that the MELD formula, when originally formulated, works relatively well. But since then, we have many years of data that could change the coefficients and change how much we weight to the INR, bilirubin, and creatinine, and refit it to the actual data that we've observed in terms of waitlist mortality. Doing such a MELD refit would actually change the deck a little bit and change the order of patients, but probably more accurately reflects than the original MELD score the mortality on the waitlist. Decreased priority for HCC patients, that's certainly coming down the pike. We still have to figure out how we're going to do this. Some of the proposals that have been talked about, including having there be a mandatory wait time for the patients that are listed for HCC between the time they get their exception points and the time they're actually eligible for a transplant. We already in Region 5 have a built-in wait time of at least 6 to 9 months, if not 12 months, whereas other regions do not. So it probably would not affect our patients very much, but would affect patients in other regions where the debt disparity between HCC and non-HCC patients is relatively high. Finally, the UNOS regions, the 11 regions that exist in this country, don't really make a lot of sense. And there's a lot of work that Dori Segev and Samar Gentry at Johns Hopkins have looked at in terms of redistricting and changing the regions such that they make more sense, that they encompass similar populations, have similar access to transplant. And just with redrawing the map, you can actually decrease the variance of the MELD scores at transplant. If you look at it, when you model these things and you go straight to just regional sharing based on the current UNOS regions, it actually does not get rid of a lot of the disparity that we see. So just going from local to regional doesn't actually fix the regional variances that we see in MELD score. The way the committee actually does this is by modeling every change that we do. So the SRTR, which is now based in the University of Minnesota, makes LSAM or liver simulation allocation models where we model an allocation policy change and see what actually happens to the distribution and allocation of these organs. Those models are then analyzed for waitlist mortality, post-transplant outcomes, etc., to see the true effects of these changes before we make these changes to national organ policy. I have to update the group and say there's actually been two changes that have been recently approved by the UNOS board that include regional sharing of livers for patients with a MELD greater than 35. In other words, now it doesn't just go from local and regional status one. The next level of patients that get it are local and regional MELD above 35. So that your patients that are sicker, that have a MELD greater than 35, have access to the regional livers before they get offered to the local patients whose MELD is 15 to 34. It was justified by looking at the mortality of patients with a MELD score greater than 35 in that they had a very similar mortality on the wait list compared to status 1 patients. And it was clearly shown that regional sharing for status 1 patients decreased mortality in that patient population. We hope we see this same effect in patients who are very sick that have a chronic liver disease but have a MELD greater than 35. So what do we still need? We still need to decrease geographic disparity and access to liver allografts. We really have to have a good conversation and argument about what the best metric for assessing fairness is and assessing equity. We should still continue to try to increase utilization of these suboptimal grafts. There's a big disincentive to use suboptimal grafts because, number one, those transplants cost more. Number two, those transplants, if they don't do well, impact our SRTR numbers and other performance measures such that our one-year graft and patient survival may go down if we continue to expand our use of DCDs, fatty livers, older donors, those donor organs with long ischemia time. However, clearly patients benefit sometimes from taking these higher risk organs in that their rate of death is certainly much higher, their risk of death is higher compared to taking even these what we would call suboptimal organs. To decrease waitlist mortality, I think we would still need to increase the efficiency of the distribution system. And again, with modern transit times, we can increase the region by which we use a unit of distribution without incurring a huge amount of longer transport time. It was actually surprising to look at some of the modeling to see that this did not increase transport time significantly. Again, I believe, and others do too, that HCC patients still have too much priority compared to the non-HCC patients. The issue is that we all love to do the HCC patients. There's a huge incentive to do the HCC patients. They're not so sick. They're easy to do. We incur less blood loss. It's technically a much easier operation. And the patients leave the hospital and do great. However, this may still not be the best use of our limited resources in saving the number of lives, a greater number of lives, by emphasizing the HCC patients. And finally, I think we do need to go beyond these DSAs, which are archaic and arbitrary lines that have been drawn because of historical and political reasons, and we need to eliminate that DSA as a unit of distribution. But it certainly is not enough just to go to regional sharing, as that doesn't seem to, at least according to the modeling, does not get rid of the geographic disparities that we still have. So in summary, the implementation of the MELD score has largely fulfilled the mandate from the final rule that we give the sickest patients their first access, at least to the local organs that are available. Significant geographic disparities still exist, but we have all found that policy change is extremely hard to implement. There are many political and other interests that really intervene when it comes to changing policy. Especially when certain policies may result in a significant decrease in the volume of transplants that are done at one center versus another. These self-interests, and since we govern ourselves, really come into play when we try to change the policies through ourselves. But I think, you know, we really do need to do the right thing for all the patients. And they may include voting against your self-interest at times, which may or may not be a completely unrealistic thing. But I think it's if we don't do it, somebody else will. Thank you.
I'm happy to answer any questions. Yeah. Mike.
Well, you're pointing out one of the reasons why it takes 5 years. Yeah, the question is, what's the status of MELD sodium? Well, we've argued in the Liver Intestinal Committee, and now finally we've agreed to using MELD sodium. Let me give you some of the arguments against MELD sodium that has been used. Sodium can be manipulated. You know, if you and it changes from day to day. So which sodium do you use? Do you use it at the time of listing? Do it at what time? Do you use it because you're somehow liberalizing their someone's water intake and their sodium goes down to 121? Now your patient gets more priority. You know, the same argument was used for creatinine and INR too, and it turns out the INR is probably more manipulable, and so is the creatinine, depending on what you're doing with the diuretic. So I don't know that these arguments are salient, or they may even be completely specious. On the other hand, we have finally gotten to a point where there's a proposal that everyone can agree with and that it'll probably come up for the board. I don't know, John, if that's already been presented to the UNOS board yet, the MELD sodium, do you know?
No.
It has not, but it is going out for public comment, and then it'll be presented to the board. And I predict that within the next year, you'll have a melatonin that's been accepted by the UNOS board. Having said that, I think that you have to be careful of what it means. It means the order of the deck has changed so that certain patients who were up here now are going to be down here and vice versa. And so, you know, one needs to explain to the patients, is like, well, your MELD score was 26, and now your MELD sodium is actually 15, and now, consequently, a MELD of 15 is now has a MELD sodium of 22. Now, it probably more accurately reflects their mortality, but we still have to explain to patients and their physicians what these implications mean. The order of the deck is being changed. So that has implications. Now, it's not going to affect those patients that are really, really sick. If you look at the addition of sodium, those patients with a high MELD will not be affected particularly much by adding sodium.
Mary Pat
Paul?
I have two questions.
Yeah.
Number one, in your graph where you looked at the dropout of patients with HCC and one without HCC, you were the only region, 185, where the dropout was higher.
That's right. Yes. So the question was, we are the only region in the entire country whose HCC dropout rate was higher than the non-HCC rate. That's because our region has the highest median MELDs as well. So our patients must face a much harsher test of time than any other region in the country. So those other patients who had listed with a MELD of 22 and 25, or even at their first upgrade to 25, they get their transplant. And it's reflected in the time to transplant. They wait a very, very short amount of time before they get your transplant. In Region 5, you do not get a transplant when you're a blood type O until you're 31 or 33. That's at least 3, 4, even 5 cycles of 3-month waits to go up on your on the MELD score. So our patients suffer, the HCC patients, a higher dropout rate. Now, the harder question is, what should the dropout rate be for the HCC patients? Should they be equal to the non-HCC patients? I mean, that's one metric of fairness or equity. On the other hand, I don't know what our sweet spot is. And by sweet spot, I mean, there are patients that don't need a transplant. Those single lesions that are well treated with less than 3 centimeters and that don't have recurrence, don't have residual cancers, those patients can probably go for years and years until they recur. On the other hand, if you try to get the highest risk patients and they have multiple recurrences, well, maybe they should fail the test of time. Maybe they shouldn't get a transplant because they're going to recur post-transplant. They have the more aggressive tumors. What I call the sweet spot is a patient that actually gets help by transplant. In other words, they will not be well treated. They will progress and eventually get to the point where they go extrahepatic or have too much disease. And yet they won't have an extraordinarily high rate of recurrence. That is a question that I don't think we've answered yet as to who we should really be transplanting with HCC. Those patients that have the moderate risk, in other words, have a problem that's best cured by transplant and yet will not recur post-transplant. That's the only area where we, as a community, have decided if you're beyond Milan and you cannot be downstaged to within Milan, you actually don't get a transplant. That's when we decide someone's quote-unquote too sick for transplant. That's the only category of disease that we have that we put a cap on how much disease you can have and still get a transplant. We have not done that for other liver diseases.
Jim?
Well, there's multiple consequences. Yeah, the question is, what's the consequence to a liver transplanter if transplant center if a lower MELD patient gets a liver offer and a higher MELD patient doesn't? Well, the first thing is, there has to be a reason why the higher MELD patient doesn't get the offer. But if the lower MELD patient gets the offer, you know, it's obviously beneficial for some things. Number one, your outcomes are probably better, although your outcomes are supposedly risk stratified. But at least your gross 1-year patient and 1-year graft survival is probably going to be better if you do the easier patients. On the other hand, I'm not so sure you're going to save the most number of lives. I think that's what we are trying to accomplish with this venture, which is to save the most number of lives. And by transplanting that patient at 35 that has a very high mortality, you're certainly going to be saving that patient has a much higher chance of dying without a transplant than your MELD of 15.
Oh, no,
we can't just, you know, I'm sorry, we can't just willy-nilly say, oh, we don't want it for this one, because at least if you're not in a single center OPO, there are patients from other centers that are going to take that liver that are interspersed between the high MELD and low patients. So if it's not a great liver organ, if it's not a perfect organ, you don't necessarily want to take it for the very top patient. But if you turn it down, there's probably a patient from another center in a multi-center OPO that's going to take that liver. So this is a decision that we make every day when a liver offer comes in for the top patient. Am I going to take it for that top, or am I going to turn it down and potentially have that liver go to another center?
Last question.
I just have a simple question. What was the original rationale for creating different UNOS regions?
Different?
UNOS regions.
Well, that's a good question. I don't know how those lines were drawn initially, but it had to do with basically minimizing the time it took to get an organ from one place to another. So the drawback is that obviously the larger the region is, the longer cold ischemia time you're going to suffer with a liver organ if you're going to have to transport it a long way. Having just said that, I've taken livers from North Carolina and from Hawaii that have traveled all the way across the country. Now, those are very specific livers that are turned down by every center in that region. So there's usually something wrong, quote-unquote, with that liver. But on the other hand, some patients are perfectly... some of the more common things that are, quote-unquote, wrong with that liver is, for example, that patient is an active IV drug abuser and was found with a needle in their arm. But the serologies and NAT testing for HIV and HCV are negative. Many centers will shy away from that particular donor, citing the risk of HIV transmission. If you calculate the risk of HIV transmission, however, for that particular donor, it's probably somewhere between 1 in 1,000 and 1 in 10,000, whereas the risk of dying in 3 months with a MELD of 25 is on the order of 25%. So if you think about the numbers, it probably behooves a patient to take that risk of transmission of viral illness, despite not... So there's many reasons why livers travel across the country, and they are suboptimal livers. But in terms of the initial lines, the country was, in my view, almost arbitrarily divided into 11 sections. Now, people have tried to secede from one to the other, thinking that, oh, you know what, this region is way too competitive. I want to be in this other region, because of the regional differences in the availability of organs and the number of transplant patients on those lists. So it really speaks to, I think, a change that needs to happen, which is to get rid of all these lines. I think if we got rid of these fixed lines and fixed boundaries and had more of a sort of dynamic amoeba of a region that is really focused around the donor hospital and encompasses either geographic or time in terms of distance traveled or number of patients that are within that amoeba, that would be the unit of distribution around that donor organ, and I think that's the unit of distribution that we should be using, as opposed to some fixed... Because whenever you have a fixed boundary, there's something that's going to happen that doesn't make sense, that some patient over that boundary, which is sicker than the patient that's being offered the organ within that boundary, could use that liver in a more urgent fashion.
Great. Thank you very much. I personally think that patient HCC is taking too much blame, but I'll talk to you later on about this.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.